I'm here with Dr. Kale Isuola of the Institute of African and Diaspora Studies, University of Lagos. And Dr. Isuola is also one of the most important Nigerian theater practitioners, a writer, an actor, a director, in fact, a man of so many parts. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Dr. Aleko Balogun.
Okay, this project is tagged Retax, Reimagining Tragedy in Africa and the Global South, being sponsored by the UW Mellon Foundation. And the research is being led by Professor Mark Flashman, the director of the Center for Theater, Dance and Performance Studies, University of Cape Town. Basically, we are looking at that concept of tragedy as received from the Aristotelian source and so on and so forth. What we are trying to do is to look at it. To what extent can we still say Aristotle's definition of tragedy still applies to us? And in what ways can we reimagine that concept of tragedy? On the one hand. On the other hand, you have been one of the most important directors in Nigeria over the years. And specifically, you had this wonderful work that you did on Olaruti Nubi, Gods Are Not Okay, one of those significant works. We're going to be talking about your definition of tragedy and then in relation to your work that you did on Olaruti Nubi, Gods Are Not Okay. So let's start from how would you describe tragedy?
Well, thank you very much. The concept of tragedy has been very controversial within the theater practice for a long time. There have been many schools of thought, and these schools of thought are also divided into two, from my own observation. The first one is the school of thought that is dominated by theater theoreticians, and the second is dominated by theater practitioners. This is inevitably so in theater because drama is all about the practice. The writing is never in any way seen to be complete if it is not acted on stage. So the theater is one of the professions that you always run from the practice to the theory and create a synergy of the two to be able to create what it is and conceptualize itself. So, the concept of tragedy from the Aristotelian perspective is all about ending in disastrous situations in which some person is perceived to be suffering what fate is not supposed to suffer. You could call it hero, heroine, but the idea is that at the end of the play, you have a disastrous situation that is, in most cases, perceived not to be deserved. You know, and that is where it evokes pity, that is where it evokes cry, weeping, and then all sorts of things. And for me, this has been the interpretation that theater theoreticians have followed over the years. However, on the other side, you have the theater performers. You discover that during performance, the director is the master of the game. The director, in most cases, will not be there when the playwright conceived the idea. In most cases, the director is not part of his scripting, but he has the ultimate artistic power to interpret, reinterpret, to suit the peculiarity of the situation at hand. Now, at this level, most directors begin to redefine tragedy to suit the message they want to pass, you know, and that then creates all sort of things depending on the directorial creativity. And at this level now, the concept, the understanding, the conceptualization of tragedy moves inevitably away from the sacrosanct, rigid, Aristotelian sense. It now becomes pragmatic. It now becomes what manifests within the context of the social tradition in which the play is located, and based again on the orientation of the director.
Okay, so in a way, you're saying that beyond what Aristotle has provided for us, we should begin to locate our own idea of tragedy within social realities.
Not just that we should begin to locate, I think we have started locating.
Okay.
And inevitably so, we need to locate because directorial interpretation will define what tragedy is. And directorial interpretation is based on one, the orientation of the director, and two, the audience society in which the play is meant to be received. These two things, the orientation of the director and the environment, the ecology of the play production, will inevitably reinterpret whatever play that you are
looking
having.
At directorial choice.
Yes.
And the audience that's receiving the production.
You have just added a third one for me. What I said is directorial orientation. It's training. It's tradition of training. That goes beyond the choice. The choice is from him. His own creativity has been added, but his orientation teleguides the choice. Then the environment will now determine what the choice
is. But is it possible for us now to also look at it? If that director has been schooled in the Aristotelian fashion, is she not going to be tailoring that concept of tragedy along that Aristotelian?
Yeah, schooling is one thing, orientation is another thing.
Well, to some extent, I'm not talking about schooling in a way, it could be a process of training as a director. I get what you're talking about. And if that line of training that he has passed through has been Aristotelian, is it not possible for that kind of world to still tilt itself towards the Aristotelian conception of this term that has been so confusing?
My immediate response is that it is not impossible. But sometimes it doesn't follow hook, line, and sinker. People go in to receive training to get certified, but they have their own reservations about the training they receive sometimes. So when they get the certification, they begin to develop the capacity to question their training. So there are many directors who receive certain traditions of training within the theater world. But as soon as they become formed, they begin to query the tradition they received, and then input their own creativity into it to be able to create different dimensions that you could see as innovation or radical departure from what they had. And that is how intellectualism develops. Otherwise, if everybody has been following the strict Aristotelian tradition, hook, line, and sinker, we have no business anymore.
Okay.
As researchers and practitioners.
Let's not go like this. We've talked about it. Let's have your own definition of tragedy.
Yeah.
Your own personal definition.
Perhaps because I have a social science orientation, my definition of tragedy is that which points to the evils of the society and what befalls those who persist in perpetration of that evil. In other words, my tragedy is that my concept, my understanding, my interpretation, especially directorial interpretation of the tragedy, refers to those things that are antithetical to humanity, to the development of humanity, and the eventual occurrences towards those who perpetrate such things, so that they will ultimately see that evil, when allowed to operate in the society, will always stand against the entire humanity. That is the way I always define tragedy.
Let's bring this idea that you brilliantly presented to your direction of honorary music. Did you work with him? Because I recall that there was a time you were a student when he was at the University of Port Harcourt. I'm not sure whether you actually
worked. Yeah, I actually was a student.
But you never worked with him.
I never worked with him, but I did certificate in theater arts at the University of Port Harcourt. That's where I, you know, got the practical exposure.
Yeah,
he was there for sabbatical or something, and he came in to give us superlative turnaround in the practice of theater as at that time. I never worked with him, but I read his text as a child in secondary school.
The
Gods Are Not to Blame. And he's one of those that kept fascinating me. In fact, if you give me the chance, I want to direct again and again and again, 1 million times if possible, the concept of tragedy in Malawi to me.
Okay, now let's look at it.
Yeah.
That the play that you did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Let's look at how did you approach that play?
Yeah, you just reminded me, this is some 20 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. My approach to read, it's a long time, because I've done series of directing of the same play after them,
after that.
And I saw that my interpretations came out much differently.
Mm.
So, because I told you that my understanding of a tragedy is based on the social situation, I want to apply it to the social situation. It appears to me like the dominant social occurrences at the time will likely taint my interpretation of scripts and then my directorial output.
Yeah, let's take just two of those
scenes.
Yeah, the one that you did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That I was a part of.
Yeah.
And another one that you did. Let's look at the changes. What informed the choices that you made?
Okay, for instance, I remember vividly during one of the rehearsals that one of the conch theater practitioners who was under my directing that time as an actor almost accused me of turning Olarotimi's tragedy to a comedy at a particular point.
Mm.
And my response was that there was a purpose for it.
Mm.
After all, I had my directorial power to interpret the play I wanted to. I mean, direct the way I wanted to interpret it. But if you look at one scene, especially the Odewale scene, the beginning of the scene when Baba Fakunle appeared on stage and about to decide the fate of, you know,
that revelation.
Mm. I played in the Babalawo, and I tried to make him more pragmatic, because it would be very absurd for a Babalawo to just say, this child will sleep with his own father, mother, and kill his own father. There's no background to it, and there's no projection towards it. To me, the interpretation would be so lucid that it will not get into the mind of the audience. So I decorated, albeit outside the script, the Babalawo's appearances and the ultimate pronouncement with certain chantings. And then after the pronouncement, I also decorated it with certain chantings to create a connect to the social activity within the Yoruba setting.
So what kind of chanting are you talking about?
Well, this I really cannot remember. But I have 1,000,001 that I could use.
No, I'm not saying that specific one, but chant as in form of the chant.
Oh yes, for the Babalawo, part of the research is that the Babalawo is different from Onishegun. And the Babalawo does not just predict without having some chance. Because Ifa is supposed to be an interpretative divination. There must be something that you are going to recite before you make pronouncement. And so I use that to correct, because as at that point, it was beginning to get to the society that Babalawo was equal to somebody who does jazz for money and who does money ritual. The society was getting uneducated.
Okay, so for you,
yes.
you actually wanted that aspect of the play
yes.
to correct the social.
Exactement, exactement. En français, branding or misinterpretation, exactement.
Mm.
Which is why I said directing, in my own view, beyond what we read in the textbook, should be able to interpret plays towards the dominant realities of a particular time. Otherwise, there will be miscommunication to the audience.
Mm.
And that is the way I approach that too. So I did series of reverse chanting to be able to let the people see that it wasn't just a conjure. It wasn't coming from the spirit world. It was based on...
He wasn't a magician.
Very good for choosing that word. It was based on what has been established. And it's so pragmatic that what is said by one Udu at a particular time can be verified in one other 15 or 16 places, and you're still likely to get the same answer as it is. You know. So that's one of the things that...
Let's not look at the tragedy that the play dramatizes. How do we relate that to the society that we live in?
Well, one, Odewale got into the floor partly because of his strong-headedness, partly because of his over-ambition, partly because, and that's my own interpretation, again, of the thinking that the king does no wrong. And I think that is the ultimate lesson that play is trying to project to the world. Now, when you are in power,
in terms of tyranny,
you know, when you are in power, you must run away, one, from temperament. Always try to hear people out, however irrelevant or useless you think what they want to say is. And Ifa says it. He says, Bob out here, Pani, I'm not got any. Udva fun gbin tolohun gori agayan boru bo ba o ti e pa ni a ma gbo tenu eni udva fe ju tolohun gbele ka oba borun bo ba o ti e pa ni a ma gbo tenu eni udva fa do tolohun dade oba. In a society of men, one person's interpretation must be suspected. You must hear out other people as plainly as possible. So when the king was approached and said, my lord, I went on the errands that you sent me, but the message I brought demands that I first converse with you.
That's Adiroko.
Yeah. At that point now.
It's a very heavy thing. He thought I shouldn't, like, a cultured Yoruba.
You know, yeah.
I should first discuss with him.
You know that. Beyond Yoruba, in international community, you don't go to a Trump and relate a message to him in the public of a press conference without first seeking what you call his audience for briefing. That's something they call briefing. Even in the university system, if the vice chancellor sends you on an errand, you're not going to start discussing that at management level before first briefing the vice chancellor at any point in time. I think it's only commonsensical, it's diplomatic, it's political, it's administrative that one's going to do. But beyond that, Odewale appears to feel that his temperament at that time was superimposed upon what Adiroko brought, and he was not going to listen to anything. A good leader must listen at any point in time. Within the context of Africa, our interpretation of tragedy is to point at that, towards leadership in Africa. Look at what is going on around the world now, in Chile, in Hong Kong, in Lebanon, protests everywhere. And you see that whether or not that protest or those protests will boomerang into serious disasters is primarily a function of how the leadership received it
and respond to
it. So Odewale, perhaps forgetting that we are doing a drama, the fate is determined from the book at an issue. But in a real life situation, which I think drama will always address, Odewale perhaps would not get into that disaster if he had been more sensitive towards listening to people. And then we talk about tyranny, and then you talk about many other things. So that perhaps influence the way I do it.
So you think, okay, I'm getting a sense out of this that your approach now is to look at that play in terms of the leader-citizen-follower relationship.
Oh,
that disconnect
between
those that are, you know, giving out the rules and those that are receiving.
Definitely, because there was absolute disconnect between Odewale's leadership and the following. The following was under suspicion, but the following meant well for him. He kept suspecting. That is what you get out of a group of citizens who gather in a place to demand change for a better society. But the president,
in the
Nigerian context, and globally, but the government, rather than look at their demands and yearnings and aspirations critically to see how they can use them to improve the system, the government will always be, you know, very hostile, if not very ruthless towards such people. That leads to tragedy. And that is a redefinition of tragedy. You won't see that in Aristotelian
In
the modern times. Perhaps not even modern, historically. Every leader that will always drive his people into disaster will first start from that lack of regard for second opinion. And that is why, again, if I will say, there's a reason. I think it's high time we began to revisit African philosophy, African thought, to redefine and probably reconfigure our concepts of dramatic terms, dramatic ideologies, starting from the tragedy which we are trying to visit now, and even comedy, because they're not rigid, they're not sacrosanct. They respond and should respond ideally towards the movements of society at any point in time.
Okay, now we come back to that, your direction of the play. So it means, in a way, in handling that play, putting it on stage, you are very sensitive to the social environment, you're very sensitive to how the play can actually speak to the audience than just entertaining them. Now let's look at another thing. You emphasize so much about Ifa, the role of Ifa, and the role of to what extent was Ifa, central to your work?
My directorial interpretation of The Gods Are Not to Blame had a very thick involvement of Ifa. Ifa was central to it.
Why was that?
And that is because the dramatic direction itself was dictated by Ifa. The first stage opened with the birth of a child. And then with the birth of a child, at the same one, comes in a Babalawo who set agenda for the play. Oldest and most knowing of all Ifa priests in this world, it is you, Agree. Mother wait, father wait, and then blah, ta, 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 ta. And until Baba Fakunle made an Ifa declaration and pronouncement, the play never had a direction. So it was Baba Fakunle's Ifa direction, Ifa's pronouncement, that gave the play its plot, its setting, and every other thing to the end. To me, that play is an Ifa play. Because within the context of Yoruba cosmology, Ifa is perceived as Eleri, witness to individual destiny. That play is a manifestation of destiny. That play is an Ifa play because, as Yorubas believe in Africa, Ifa is the only person who determines what each person's destiny is, how it manifests. And that is why I involved a lot of Ifa. And also tried to explain to people, as you insinuated the other time, that Ifa is not magic. It is interpretative. It is philosophical. It's like a scripture. And when it makes its predictions and statements, human beings should tread cautiously so that they don't go against their own destiny. I feel it's an Ifa play because it plays all about destiny, what will happen
Okay, let's look at now. Then you, I know another thing that is very close to Ifa. Yes. We were talking about language and what.
Yes.
Looking at music.
Yes.
What kind of music did you use?
Yeah, thank you very much. I give that play a very thick, defined interpretation in terms of the conception, in terms of the interpretation, in terms of even the plotting. I used a lot of Ifa songs, you know, during the play. For instance, I'm talking about the one I directed in 1999. Mm-hmm. I did another one at Oshogbo, one secondary school that was commissioned, and then with Sahara Energy, you know. I mean, so I really can't remember, but I know I bring in a lot of Ifa songs, which would teach certain lessons or create certain narratives in line with the theme of the play.
Okay.
At any point in time. So I can remember the Eleko Idere, Shebolo Ujere, Orosho Fufu, Ududu, Orosho Pupa, Ovakoti, Titi, Olekenka. My memory doesn't fail me.
So what exactly is that song saying?
Oseleko Idere, Obolo Ujere, Eleko Idere, Obolo Ujere. Orosho dudu, orosho pupa, pupa boti ti di oleke. Eleko jere abolo. And I remember we used that song as a background to usher in some of Odewale's lines towards the tragic flaw. You know, that particular part I cannot remember. But that Eleko jere, you know, olo ishebolo jere, orosho dudu. It's a way of, it's an Ifa song, and it's simply saying that what you have been accused of, well, you denied it, that you were not part of it. But you are the culprit, but you keep pointing at other people. And I call Jerry. Shebolo Jerry, you deny that you never had profit, but with your Ashodudu. The whole world sees you
in your full
regalia, but you see yourself in a different way, and that's about what played around when the whole world, after Odewale's denial to be spoken to in the public, the whole world knew what was happening. The whole world knew that he was the source of the problem, but he kept, you know, seeing himself as another thing, and then pointing, that's accusing right. finger towards another person. That's one of the reasons we use that song. Then I also remember at a point we use to call to order a particular scene where important messages were going to come up. I used the beginning of the first song, the chorus.
Yes.
Something like Oloto Eko Ora Olufe Opele Babalawo, and then it's a way of calling to order a particular scene at any point in time. In other words, when I pick a play and I want to direct a play, I first give the play a thematic interpretation. Is it based on religion? Is it based on destiny? Is it based on education? Is it based on art and aesthetics? Is it based on culture? And so once I have an interpretation of the theme of the play, you know, post-directorial analysis, I mean post-playwright analysis, I then create songs, dances, and art that will be used to make that play an artistic reality. Knowing fully well that the main role of the director is to create artistic reality of the concept that, you know, the playwright has put on stage.
Now, let's now look at perhaps on the final note.
Yeah.
Can we still imagine that the gods as a play that actually dramatizes that kind of intense tragedy, apart from speaking to our own reality, can we still imagine that it is possible for us to see that play in light of some of those social dislocation that we're experiencing in Nigeria, for example?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Plays don't die in terms of the theme. The setting can get old, but plays never get old in terms of the theme.
Even the subject matter doesn't get old. If you look at Odewale's scenario in The Gods Are Not a Play, the key issue is destiny. But destiny itself, as perceived by Yoruba, is dialectical. Dialectical in the sense that it will always ultimately manifest. But there are always rooms provided to reduce the ultimate tragedy.
If there is one.
If there is one, when we are talking about destiny. Odewale's situation in that play will say ultimately end well. He will still kill his father and marry his mother. But then the punishment would have been limited to him as a person, not the children, not the wife, not the disaster that it caused upon the society where children started dying and people started getting mad at any point in time. That is the dialectical nature of destiny within Yoruba cosmology. That destiny will always occur. Okay? A king who has been enthroned to fail will always fail. But how do we ensure that that failure does not lead the society into disaster? And that is the situation. So, applying to social reality of today's world, a president that comes to throne will ultimately fail or pass. That could be the destiny, which we don't have power on. But what the play should teach us is that there are some certain regulations and social constructs that will, while not preventing the ultimate, you know, destiny and destination, regulate things in such a way that disaster does not come to the entire humanity as a result of the error of one person. And I think if there's anything we want to apply to this reality, that's actually the point when it comes to a play like Olarotimi's Gods Are Not to Play. Because ultimate questions that drive towards anybody who reads that play or the rest of that play is that if the gods are not to blame, who then is to blame? It has been a big debate. Some people keep telling you the gods are to blame because they invoke that kind of destiny upon Olarotimi. After all, they have the capacity not to, you know, allow that destiny to go. But I feel, as a director, and my interpretation of that play is that the gods were not to blame. The blame should go to Olarotimi. I mean, to Odewale because of bad leadership.
What about Bonka that was given the baby to Van Slaughter?
Bonka was just human and natural.
And isn't Odewale like that?
Odewale wasn't like that.
Bonka,
okay, there are two dimensions to it. Bonka was a servant. Yorubas have a proverb. They say, "Ta aparon inise eru afitomoje."
So he was playing his role.
He was playing his role as a role by person. And there's a philosophical underpinning for that. That's one. Two. Apart from that role that Bonka was playing, an interview is going on at this point. Apart from that role that Bonka was playing, if you now look at Odewale at the other side, Odewale was not a servant. Odewale was a king.
Now you see the situation changed.
Yes.
Look at it.
Yes.
This Odewale was born in the palace.
Yes.
Was taken away into the bush.
Yes.
Raised by commoners.
Yes.
The roles have been reversed.
Yes.
Bonka is a servant, but works in the palace.
Yes.
Don't you think it's possible for us to look at reversal of
what?
Bonka is a servant, he's a nobody,
yes,
but he's lived in the palace, he's imbibed in,
yes,
in code, the,
yes,
culture of the palace.
Yes.
You know, that ethical standard.
A very beautiful way of interpreting it.
Yeah, yeah.
In another dimension. But also don't forget that you are using the social learning theory to interpret this now. That it's not what you are born with or how you are born. It is the circumstances around you when you are growing up that define your character. That's a partial explanation. There's also another explanation that is more autochthonous. Kings are made from heaven. That's the Yoruba's conception. For you to come out from a royal family, it flows in almost everything in you, even when you are among prisoners and warders. You know, it is kings are made from heaven. So if you are a child of a king and you are a prince, your aura, your charisma will show at any point in time that you have reality in your blood. So while we are using social learning theory, we should not also forget the nature nurture theory, which means that what you are is in your being, not where you are raised, as the case may be. There are many theoretical possibilities that we can use to approach it. But the case is that Odewale was a son of a king. That aura will be in him naturally. And after being raised within the bush by a commoner, as you perceive it, he came back to the palace to become a king. So it's a two against one situation. Born of a king, went into
thrown
the bush,
away,
thrown away,
and
then found his way back. If, for any reason, that two over one dichotomy, we should know that there's another dimension to the explanation. So what you expected an Odewale to do in terms of behavior, you don't expect a Gonka to do. Gonka was a servant, Odewale was a king. A king is a leader. He's accountable to the people. And that is why we can still apply it to the current social realities of our country and African countries. You are accountable to the people. When a servant takes a decision, who cares? The best you can do is take your decision and nobody tell you are right or wrong. But 1,000,001 people, institutions and structures within society will interpret and analyze the decisions of a king. So it needs to be more thorough, diplomatic, assertive, you know, sensitive. Too many other words can be used to do this before you ultimately take decision. I think it has a social reality to what is going on around us today.
That's a very deep one. That's a very deep one. Yeah, thank you so very much, Dr.
Thank
Kaji
you,
Dr.
Lekobaloko,
for this
it's
wonderful interview.
I mean, it's a good reflection over